Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. I'm Mike Pratz and I have with me today two wonderful doctors you may be very familiar with at this point, Dr. Jacob Avila and Dr. Cray Bolger.
Hello.
Good morning.
Friends, it's always a pleasure. Today we're going to be discussing a paper titled Focused Transesophageal Echocardiography by Emergency Physicians is Feasible and Clinically Influential. Observational Results from a Novel Ultrasound Program. Cray, what's going on with TEE these days?
Well, this is from the land up north, good old Canada. Rob Arntfield et al. From February 2016 in the Journal of Emergency Medicine. And I think that title says it all. TEE is Feasible and Influential in the ED. TTE has been kind of a mainstay of emergency medicine practice for almost the last decade. However, TEE has become much more portable and more readily available. And as is the nature of emergency medicine physicians, if there's a new tool that can provide faster, better patient care, we want it. And so TEE is now creeping into some emergency departments. And Arntfield et al. Kind of looked at, can ER physicians use TEE? And will it change our management of our patients? And so that's kind of the focus of the study. They look at what diagnoses we'll pick up. And they also address some of the downsides, such as training, cost, obviously the invasiveness of putting the probe down someone's throat, and the politics of, you know, the potential turf wars with cardiology and anesthesia. The big question was, can we do it in the emergency department? And does it change what we do with our patients?
So I think you bring up a lot of good points, Cray. This is something that has been moving into the field of emergency medicine because, like you said, there's so much that we can do with it. It can be used in arrest to get better echo views of the heart. It can change your management, see how well you're doing compressions. And a lot of the downsides that people cite, whether it be lack of training, fear of complications, the cost, the invasiveness, or the political climate of the healthcare institution at which you work, maybe those things can be overcome for the benefit of the patient in this case. So this is a really important study to kind of see, is this something that we can do safely, and does it change management? So, Jacob, tell us about how they looked at this.
So as far as methods, what they did is they took 14 emergency physicians and they gave them a four-hour workshop, which included 2 hours of didactic and 2 hours of simulated enhanced hands-on training. And then they kind of send them off to do these scans. Now, they did give them this sheet of paper that they were supposed to fill out when they did the scans. And it's pretty extensive, the sheet of paper, and impressive. They had to put the indication, the background, any issues with the probe, what they found, and if they had any actions that they did as a result of that TEE.
That's great. So that is very useful for the standpoint of the study, because now looking back retrospectively, they can see each case of TEE, how did it affect management?
Exactly.
And I think another interesting thing that they did, anticipating that some people might come back from the study and say, well, maybe we could have seen all those things on transthoracic echo. So they very wisely looked up what some of the governing bodies had defined as the scope for transthoracic echo, and they tried to tease out which one of those findings could have been discovered on transthoracic as opposed to TEE, and when they looked at the results, they tried to figure out if some of this stuff could have been accomplished just by TTE.
Yeah, I actually like that a lot. And regarding the scan itself, the TEE, there was not advanced calculations they were required to do. They basically got taught those four views, the four main views. It was mid-esophageal four-chamber, the transgastric short access, the mid-esophageal long access, and the mid-esophageal bicable view. Now, I don't have TEE available at my shop, but I've done a couple of conferences where TEE is available, and these four views are very easy to get. They're not complicated and don't require any really extra training other than how do you manipulate the probe.
Right. For those of you not familiar with TEE, it's not as simple as standard ultrasound in the way that there are crystals that you have to, you can rotate them around to get a different planes of view, and you can also flex your probe to change your viewpoint as well. And you do have to do some of those manipulations in obtaining these views, but overall, compared to the 20-something other views that could be in TEE, mm-hmm. this is a very simplified protocol that's very feasible. So let's take a look at the results. Overall, in this retrospective study, they obtained 54 TEE exams. These were done by the 12 physicians that obtained the training. So 10 of these were attending emergency physicians, 2 were senior residents. All of these were intubated. So keep that in mind, because again, if you're trying to do a TEE on an awake patient that is not intubated and they're critically ill, you may run into some trouble, and that may not be a great way to start off your TEE program. So right. the indications that they had for these patients were mostly for arrest. So 43% of them were intra-arrest TEEs. The rest of them were either post-arrest, hypotension, or concern for aortic dissection. As far as the feasibility, 100% had successful probe insertion. 83% of those were on the first pass.
Nice.
Then after that, you know, sometimes they had to use the laryngoscope to assist in the probe insertion.
It would be interesting to see how those numbers change without intubation. You know, once you plug the wrong hole, it's much easier to go down the right one.
That's a really good point. I think it would be more complicated, especially, you know, from a patient comfort standpoint, if they weren't able to tolerate it or you didn't get a good sedation. Also, as far as feasibility, 98% of these patients had produced interpretable images. So again, that's pretty solid. And mm-hmm. I don't have a direct comparison to TTE, but considering that these were probably really sick patients with a lot of pathology, that sounds pretty good and potentially better than what you could accomplish with TTE.
Anecdotally speaking, I would say that's a significantly higher rate than the TTE studies in probably comparable patient populations. You get in tachypnea, distended abdomens, limited patient mobility and cooperation. Your TTE can be really challenging.
Okay, so now that we know that they got good images, let's take a look at the safety aspect of TEE. They did not have any documented aerodigestive injuries in all of the patients that survived to hospital admission. Now, 15 patients did die, and they didn't get autopsies, so it's possible
it's probably because of the TEE.
No, I don't think that's really fair. Fair to assume. It could have been. I mean, that's the worst case scenario, that all 15 of those patients, they perforated their esophagus and they ended up dying from that and we never found out. But I think that's probably unlikely.
Yeah. Especially because, like, the main reason they did it was for cardiac arrest, right?
Because they were dead.
Right.
Right. You can't get deader than dead.
And I think that's the argument that a lot of people use for why it should be okay to do this, even though it does have some risks of side effects or complications or injuries. If they're already in arrest, you know, it's worth a shot.
Sure.
You can't make dead people more dead.
Right.
Right. So let's look at the clinical impact of the scan, because I think this was really interesting. Mm-hmm. They found that there was a therapeutic impact to doing these TEEs in 67% of the cases. 43% of the cases, this was changing CPR, either replacing someone who is too fatigued and not getting good compressions, or they were misplacing where they were doing chest compressions and not actually getting a good squeeze of the heart. 30% of the time, they used TEE to stop the resuscitation, and about 18% of the time, they used TEE to guide their hemodynamic assessment and decide whether to give volume or vasoactive drugs. And then in a few cases, they also used it to help them put in a pacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing interesting, Jacob, you had mentioned all the views mm-hmm. and how they're fairly simplified and kind of easy to obtain. So they looked at how often all of these views were used in these exams, all the 54 exams they had. So interestingly, the mid-esophageal four chamber was achieved 98% of the time. That was the most common. And that's probably because you just put in the probe and that's what comes up generally.
Yeah.
So the rest of them were used less frequently. So the transgastric short axis, 81%, esophageal long axis, 79%, and bicaval view, only 47%.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I mean, that 98% for the mid-esophageal four-chamber view, I wonder how many times I just kind of got that view and you're like, yeah, that's enough.
And just didn't try to, yeah. I would think if I can get an apical four on somebody,
I'm happy. That gives me every information I need.
Yeah. What else do I want to do?
I mean, these numbers, I think you got to interpret them a little bit with caution because it doesn't mean that these were the ones that were available to be obtained. I think that those were the ones that were most used.
That's a good point. I don't want people to misinterpret it thinking that these were harder to get or not as useful. It's maybe just that people stopped at the first one because they had all the information they wanted at that time.
Right.
So lastly, they looked at which of the findings on TEE could have been found by transthoracic echo. And they found that of the 54 exams, about 55.6 of them could have potentially been found on transthoracic echo as far as the findings. So not that they actually checked to see if they had windows or could get these views, but of the things that they were using for decision making, about 56% of them could have also been seen on transthoracic. So what do you guys think from this? Is there any limitations we need to consider? Is this going to change your management? Do you think it's good evidence?
Well, the main limitation, you're always going to see this when you're introducing something. It's the lamest limitation ever, which is it's operator dependent or whatever. And that is always going to be mentioned. And I think that is something that's not a thing. I mean, you just have to do it and you get a couple of these under your belt and you're going to be able to do just as well, I think, as these people do. I mean, they only got a 4-hour class and they were getting these results, which is important.
I agree. And most of these users aren't pure novice, right? So most of these people have TTE experience. So it's not, what am I looking at? It's just putting it in and getting your orientation, Mm-hmm. We know what an apical four chamber looks like. You just have to kind of play the mirror game and get your mind used to thinking about it a little bit differently.
All right.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that this study really is helpful in pushing TEE forward into the realm of the emergency physician. Sure, this was a small population and retrospective, but I think that it does show that, at least in this population, there's no complications and it can change your management in a way that is not always available by transthoracic echo. So my take-home points from this were that, as the title states, transesophageal echo appears to be feasible in the emergency department, and they had 100% success rate in this patient population, and that TEE can change management of your patients.
So the title was correct.
The title was very accurate.
Agree with title.
All yes. Right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us again, and we'll talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel, more
ultrasound gel podcast.
Hey, did I tell you guys my cucumber story?
No.